It's usually when we give talks here, it's to solve all the problems of life. But I want to give it another angle today. I remember a story someone told me some years ago about a woman in Thailand who stopped going to the monastery. And when asked why, she said, "Well, look, the only time that women go to monasteries in Thailand is when they have a problem. So if my friends see me going into the monastery, they'll think I've got a problem. And most of the problems they have is relationships. So my friends will think I'm having trouble with my husband. Therefore I better not go into the monastery. People get the wrong ideas." And how many times is it people just go to these places thinking they're just going to try and solve the problems? Is that the only reason to come to a place like this? To fix up all the difficulties and problems in life. But no, there's something more than that. And so the topic of today's talk, drawn from the US Constitution, is not the Second Amendment of guns, the right to bear arms. No, this is the pursuit of happiness instead of the escape from suffering. Pursuing happiness instead. Because there's a story which I've often mentioned, which was a very powerful story, about that person who I met in Singapore Institute of Mental Health, the professor who was the head of the schizophrenia unit, who, when I asked him how he treats schizophrenia, would say, "I don't treat schizophrenia anymore." And he was a doctor in charge. I said, "What do you do?" He said, "Just like you've been teaching us, I treat the other part of the person, the part which is not schizophrenic." And if you understand that, you can understand this talk today. It's not treating the problems of life, treating the other part of life, the happiness part of life. You can either pull out the weeds of your garden, or you can just plant more flowers. Which way do you want to grow a beautiful garden? And actually, pulling out the weeds, if you have a big monastery of many hundreds of acres, is endless. But if you plant the flowers, then it's something you can do which is far more fun. And it works. Just like that professor of psychiatry said, when I asked him, "What are your results?" "Far better than conventional treatments," he was saying. "It actually works." So today I'm going to talk about, not about all the problems of life, not about all your anxieties, not about all your fears, not about all the terrible things which have happened to you in your life. I'm talking about the other part of life, pursuing happiness and seeing the delight in the world. I was reminding myself of an old story which I don't think I've told us for years. It is actually in Opening the Door of Your Heart, but I don't think many of you may remember this because it's a very ancient story. Because I remember just trying to find out a purpose in life, a meaning in life when you're very young. I was fortunate that even though I was come from a poor family, I had a decent brain. In those days, you had more time. Even at school, because I could always do well at school, so get my homework done early. You could always have lots of free time and holidays where you weren't just messing around and playing. You were spending some time just figuring out what you wanted to do in life, and especially at university. In those days, you had so much time. And I used to spend much of that time, in the vacations, just going up to the northwest coast of Scotland, which was the nearest wilderness area I could find. And just taking a tent, a little stove, and staying out in the mountains for days on end and just enjoying the beautiful solitude and peace. And I remember this one time I was walking along this road way up in the northwest of Scotland, and it was a road next to the coast. And it was one of these incredibly glorious summer days in Scotland. It was warm. The sky was perfectly blue, and the ocean was just exquisite. And it was a part of that area of land which had thousands of little islands just scattered as far as you could see. And everything was absolutely perfect. And I was enjoying every second of this experience. I was really drinking. This was an amazing time when it wasn't cloudy, it wasn't raining. I had nothing much to do. And I was just skipping along without a care in the world, perfectly happy. Until I saw there was a car parked on the side of the road. It was a very sort of lonely road with hardly any people there, no sort of villages for miles. And I saw this car, and my first idea was this guy had also just was traveling somewhere and decided to stop so he could also enjoy the view. But when I actually came close enough and looked in the window of the parked car, you know what I saw? The guy was reading a newspaper. And I thought, what the heck are you doing? Reading a newspaper when all this beauty, this serenity, this incredible brightness and life and happiness was just right outside. And what was he reading? He was reading about the wars. Reading about the economy going into recession. Reading about corruption in the government. Reading about his football team losing. Isn't that what we read in the newspapers day in, day out? And just on the other side of that newsprint, only maybe a couple of millimeters, was beautiful, quiet, serene, delicious nature at its very best. And I remember thinking at the time, to get out a pair of scissors. And just while that fellow was looking at the newspapers, creeping into his car and cutting out a little hole just so he could see what was on the other side of all of that newsprint about the faults and mistakes of the world. And to have a perception of beauty instead. Not just to see the things which were wrong, which is what's in the newsprint, but to see the happiness on the other side. And that became a great simile for me about what life is. Why is it that we fill our minds with the problems of the world like reading the newspaper? I must admit, when I read the newspaper, I always, and ask the monks here, it's true, they see me do this, I always go to the comics first. Always. I just go to the happy part first of all. Why not? Because with the pursuit of happiness, you can see there's so much beauty around. But our nature is always to focus on the problems, to focus on the schizophrenia of the world, instead of focusing on the other part, instead of pursuing the happiness of life, which is there. There was so much beauty, and I was enjoying it. Well, these other guys were busy reading the newspapers. And you think, what a waste of a life. And this is the same in your life. Yeah, you've all got problems. You've all got difficulties. I've got problems. I've got difficulties. You have to run monasteries. You have to help the nuns build their big building project. You have to somehow or other get people in the Buddhist Society of Western Australia to please come to the fundraising dinner on the 22nd of June. It's so hard, there's still 9 tables left. It's only $160. One of our people in our monastery got pinged by the speed camera. We got the letter today. He has to pay $300. So just think, there's $160, it's not that much. Just think, you've been pinged by Ajahn Brahm's speed camera. And you've got to pay and come to our dinner, which is only in how many weeks' time? 6 weeks' time. And it's supporting a good cause. It's so hard for me to do these things. So I've got all my problems as well. That's the advertisement embedded in today's talk. And you can get the tickets from the reception desk afterwards. Please be very good. And if it's anyone's birthday, then just buy them a ticket. If it's your wedding anniversary, buy them a ticket, you know, for the wedding. Even better if it's your divorce anniversary. Why don't people celebrate divorces these days? and come. I know they actually come to the temple quite often. They always make merit on their birthdays by, you know, feeding the monks or the nuns, giving a donation. They also do it on their anniversaries when they're married. Why not coming on your divorce day as well? Oh, freedom at last. Anyway, maybe I'm going a bit too far there, being unromantic, but never mind. But I have my problems with all the stuff I've got to do. But a lot of times you don't focus on that. You focus on the beauty of life as well. Because now there, over in Scotland, there was so much stillness and happiness. And you know what? I was walking in those places and camping out there, and there was nothing going on. And I remember the time trying to work out the meaning of life, thinking that there in the stillness you can meditate, you can think and work out as a young man what you're going to do in life and where you're going to go. Yeah, it was true, I had all these ideals. What I really wanted to do in life was my personal happiness and also to give happiness to others. At least I wasn't too far off there, because it wasn't like solving the problems in the world. That's negativity. That is just like pulling out the weeds. I wasn't going to solve the problems of the world. I was going to plant the flowers, create happiness in the world. And the two are totally different. If you think you're going to solve the problems in the world, they become endless and they become intractable. You just can't do it. It's just you try and it doesn't work. And you burn yourself out. You know why you burn yourself out? When there's a lot of people do that. They really are working hard, you know, in clinics trying to treat people with drug addictions or people who have other mental health problems, people who are lonely, people who are old. There's so many wonderful people in there, but you know they're treating the sicknesses, they're not treating the other part. And because we focus on negativity day in or day out, after a while we just get burnt out. Do you know when people get burnt out because they just focus on problems and negativity and the faults, just like reading the newspapers day in and day out? And just on the other side of that newspaper, it's so close, there's just so much beauty and happiness and joy. So what about we find another way? Instead of solving the problems of the world, trying to add more happiness into the world. Just adding joy. Like that great Dr. Patch Adams. I don't know how good a doctor he was, how good at curing illnesses, but he really was a great comedian, and he could make people laugh. That's why even as a monk, I'm not quite sure what a good monk I am, but I certainly know how to make people laugh. And make sometimes, anyway. Usually I just make people groan. But it's the same thing, really. But you can see that just adding that happiness and adding that beauty, adding that joy, sometimes people forget about their problems and the difficulties and the sicknesses and the cancers and the pain, and they just laugh and see the beauty and see the happiness and see the joy in the world. So instead of trying to solve the world's problems, how about trying to add more happiness into the world? The pursuit of happiness. And it's not just in others, in yourself as well. How often do you look at yourself and think of all the faults, all the things which need to be fixed up, all your errors, all of the stuff which has gone wrong in your life, which is going wrong now, which I'm sure is going to go wrong afterwards. If you focus on that, and you always see problems and problems and problems and problems in life, which is one of the reasons why most people come here. If you don't look at those, but look at something else, look at the beauty just on the other side. And you know, it's only 2 millimeters of newsprint. On the other side of those faults is a beautiful world. It is so close to you. It just needs a change of attitude, that's all. Seeing a little bit deeper, a little bit, and just cultivating the delight, cultivating beauty, cultivating happiness. It's not that difficult to do. So yeah, I have all my problems to do in life. And yeah, sometimes you get some success solving people's problems. People actually do come and tell me, oh, thank you, Ajahn Brahm, you saved my life. Thank you, Ajahn Brahm, blah, 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 blah. But there's something more than that. I'm not just trying to save people's life and keep them alive. I'm not trying to save people's marriages and keep them together. It's just what they do once they are together, to try and create that happiness and joy in life, that pleasure, that lightheartedness, that ability to see in that person that you've chosen to live with what you saw when you first fell in love. And I'm not being romantic. I'm just being real. There's incredible beauty in people. And it just needs to look for it. And then you see it. You see so much beauty in these prisoners who come and work over at Bodhinyana Monastery every day. Or even worse, better, those people not even allowed out. You see so much beauty and purity and goodness in there. When you see that, you know what happens? They see it too. When they see it, it grows. When it grows, they change. They realize they're not sort of bad people anymore. Just like you. You're not a bad person. So hard sometimes to actually talk to people like that, especially people who've been wounded. People have been wounded by their own actions or by the actions of others or by the actions of life. They've had a hard time. Yeah, you've had a hard time. You had a good time as well. Why is it we focus so much on the hard time we've had, the difficulties, all the stuff which has happened to you this week? Why is it you remember just all the bad stuff? You know that old story. I think I told it even last week of the two chicken farmers. I'm not going to sort of say it only just in passing. Two chicken farmers, one collected the shit, the other one collected the egg. And they brought that into the house with them. Which was the smart chicken farmer? Do you go into the shed and fill the basket full of the stinky stuff? Or do you fill it with eggs? When you collect the produce of your past, when you look this past week, what's happened to you? What do you remember? What do you put in this basket you call memory and bring into this present with you? Are you shit collectors or egg collectors? When I tell that story, everyone admits they're shit collectors. And they don't collect eggs. So this is the problem with our world. When we collect eggs, we look at the past and we think of all the wonderful, beautiful, lovely things which have happened to us. We are someone who is pursuing happiness, not pursuing problems and mistakes. And if you can pursue that in your past, pursue the happiness which you've had and let the pain, the difficulties, the disappointments, the errors, the faults, let that disappear. Why not? It's just training, that's all. It's just seeing another way of looking at life, not taking out the weeds, but planting the flowers. Seeing that's a different option. It is the pursuit of happiness, not the pursuit of faults and pain and difficulties. We pursue that in the past. We pursue that in the future. And then we pursue it in the present, in ourselves and the people we live with. It's amazing. Sometimes people say, you can't change people. Yes, you can. People do change. And the way you change them, the way you change yourselves, is to pursue that happiness inside. Yeah, I was trying to find out the meaning of life, and I was thinking. And I realized I was just the same as that person reading the newspaper. I was just reading all these thoughts inside. And all this beautiful stillness and happiness was going on inside of me. I was trying to think that the meaning of life was actually some achievement I get in the future. I become a great monk and help the whole world. I was just telling someone today that, yes, first of all, to be the spiritual director of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia, but then change that to being the spiritual dictator of the Buddhist Society. And now I'm the spiritual dictator of this Buddhist community. Then I can be the spiritual dictator of the Buddhist Society of South Australia. Then New South Wales. Then the whole of Australia. Then New Zealand as well. And then the whole world. That's what people think, you know. They're going to just heal the whole world. And how stupid and egomaniacal that can be. And so instead, as a young man, I pause. Instead of trying to have all these dreams of where I wanted to be and what I wanted to achieve in life, I stopped and realized I was sitting in a beautiful part of the world, trying to dream of some future time, and I was missing the incredible stillness and peace of where I already was. This is the problem with people. We always think that the goals of life are somewhere in the future. Some thing which we can achieve when we complete our exams, when we pay off the mortgage, when we build our nun's monastery. We think that when that's done, then I'll be happy. I did a story about that some years ago. When I finish this, then I'll be happy. And that was again a story. I figured that out early on in life. People are still figuring that out now. I figured this out when I was doing my little exams as a student, as a school kid in England. You know, they have O levels and A levels. They have those in Malaysia and Singapore as well sometimes, and in Hong Kong. They had these O levels, which you take about 16. And I took them a bit early. And my parents and teachers said it's so important. Pass those exams, and then you do well in life. You'll be happy. So I liked playing soccer in those days. You know, we didn't realize just how much soccer players get paid these days. I could have been a million. I was pretty good. But they said, no, don't play soccer. Stay home. Do your homework. Because if you do your homework and study and stop wasting so much time with your friends, when you pass your exams, then you'll be happy. You know, I followed their example and I did well. You know what happens when you pass an exam? You have to do another one a couple of years later. So I had to do another one 2 years later called the A levels, but these were really important. If you pass these, then you can go to university. And if you go to university, you'll be set for life, you'll be happy. And at that time, I must admit, I wasn't chasing a football anymore. I was chasing girls. That's 16, 17, that's what you did. So my parents, my teacher said, stop chasing the girls. Stop going to all these parties and stuff. Stay home. Do your homework. Get good A-level results. Then you go to university. So that's what I did. And I passed. And I went to university. More exams. But they said, no, it's a big university. You get a degree from that university, then you'll be happy for life. You know, that, as I said in my story in the book, that is when I started to get what I call suspicious. Aren't you suspicious yet? When I pay off the mortgage, then I'll be happy. When I retire, then I'll be happy. When the kids leave home, then I'll be happy. You know, when I give birth to my kid, then I'll be happy. When I get my love of my life, then I'll be happy. And don't you notice that that's what most people feel the meaning of life is? You know, when I when I win the lottery, then I'll be happy. You know, come on. Fat chance, no chance. And in the end, this is the cause of most major religions. Not Buddhism, I'm happy to say. Then what do? Old people, they go to church. Some of them come here. They give donations. They make merit. You know why? Because they think, if I go to church, if I go to the mosque and be a good person, give my donations, then when I die, then I'll be happy. Now you know what religion is. It's when I die, then I'll be happy. And just like go to university, I saw people who got their degrees. They weren't happy. They were working hard. I saw people who were married. They certainly weren't happy. I saw people who paid. I saw people who had retired. Were they happy? And I go, oh, this aches. Oh, I've got to go for knee replacement. Oh, I can't hear you. They weren't happy at all. So the idea this is going to continue on and when you die and go to heaven, then you'll be happy. Ha, ha, ha. Show me the evidence. I really started to doubt that. So I was not going to pursue happiness in the future. That was a myth. And how many of you actually see the adverts on TV? When you buy this soap powder, then your clothes will be so white, you'll be popular with all your friends. When you buy this big new sports car, then all these beautiful girls will come. Then you'll be happy. Isn't that what adverts are? Have a look at the adverts, and isn't it, when I get this, or when I do that, then I'll be happy. And does it work? How many times have you been doing that? All these years, you've been working hard. When I get rich, then I'll be happy. When I get the promotion, then I'll be happy. When I get, come on. You should have become suspicious like me a long time ago. But at least become suspicious now. The pursuit of happiness is not in the future. Just like me, in those mountains of Scotland. Yeah, you know, all these great goals and achievement in life, all I want to do. When I do all of that, then I'll be happy. When I save all these people, when I build a big monastery, when the nuns' monastery is complete, when I can retire. I've been talking about retire. Ever since the Pope retired, it gave me hope. the one day I could retire too. I mean, the Pope left it till 85. That's too old, Pope. Please, you know, out of compassion for the rest of us, retire a bit earlier so I can retire too. Because people, I've threatened that many times. You know, can a monk retire? Why not? I mean, isn't it the case in Australia, 65, you're allowed to retire? I've only got 3 years to go. Yeah. But you won't let me, will you? No. No, because it doesn't work like that as a monk. Most people, when you get old, you know, you get decrepit, and then you can leave. But when a monk becomes decrepit, they think that's wisdom. And they're more venerable, and they start worshipping you. And when you don't remember their names, they say, oh, great, he doesn't remember, he's let go. Shows he's peaceful. He doesn't live in the past, because he can't remember the past. There we go. But so I often tell people, so you know, that I think English Noel Coward, he wrote this song that life begins at 40, and he wrote a song years and years ago, and people keep saying that life begins at 40, and then some people said 50 is the old, it's a new 40. They have all these other excuses, but I know for a monk and for a nun that life begins at 70 for a holy man or a holy woman. That's where we really get into it. That's when we really get venerable and famous. So I've got a few years of anonymity to go, and then I'm in big trouble. But where was I going with this? Oh, yeah, in Scotland. There I was, planning all the future. And you're planning all the future. When I get this, then I'll be happy. When I get the election right in Malaysia, then I'm happy. How many times is it that we miss the happiness which is really right around us, right in this moment? There was in Scotland, philosophizing, trying to work out the meaning of life, trying to think what I wanted to do in life. Now all I needed to do is to open my eyes and see all this beauty and serenity just right around me. And it was absolutely gorgeous. Not when I get here, achieve that, then I'll be happy. You'll never get happiness that way. Right now, right here, with what you have, with who you're with, even in this old, it's not really sort of salubrious, it's pretty simple, meditation hall or main hall, Dhamma hall in Dhammaloka Buddhist Center, Nollamara. Here is those mountains of Scotland. Here you can find as much serenity and peace and happiness as you can ever want. It's just looking for it. And you find it. It's right here. And as I mentioned in the meditation, a little bit extra, I've always mentioned that in this present moment you're creating your future. But this moment will one day be your past. You're also creating your past now as well. It's wonderful to know the past is actually created. Right now. Later on you'll be looking back, maybe this evening, what a wonderful time you had in the center, and this moment will be your past. Do you want to create nice memories? Do you want to create a beautiful past and a wonderful future? It's right here. So in this moment, it's not when I get somewhere else and I'll be happy. I demand to be happy now. And it's an amazing thing. When you pursue happiness, you realize the only ever place you could possibly find it was always right in front of your nose, right now, right here. Here it is. But you missed it. Because in our society, in our world, in so many places, even in religions, you get enlightened, then you'll be happy. You get deep meditation, then you'll be happy. Have you ever noticed you're missing it? It's one of my favorite sayings. I said this to someone earlier today. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. And that is the essence of the Buddha's Four Noble Truths. You know, sometimes that people comment, this is just ordinary Buddhism. Why don't we get to the deep stuff? Actually, this is deep stuff. It's just people don't recognize it because they can understand it. They think to be deep, it has to be something you don't understand. It's true, you know, sometimes what people say. But this is deep. When you want something more, when I get this, then I'll be happy. You can't have happiness now. You're missing it. So there are so many times in our life we pursue happiness, yeah. We don't pursue it in the future. We don't pursue it in getting something more, in getting rid of the things we don't like. We pursue it in this beautiful way of just being here and embracing this moment with this beautiful, wonderful, serene compassion. People always have this understanding, this feeling, this sense that, you know, compassion, love is the essence of things. It is. But they don't understand what the compassion truly is. And compassion is not just for people. It's not just for beings. It's even for this moment. Compassion just to be right here with what you have. Opening the door of your heart to this moment, to the reality right in front of you, in front of your nose, in front of your eyes, right in your heart, right now, opening up to this instead of closing up and trying to get rid of it to try and get something better. Opening up to this moment, letting it be. It's not actually letting it be, because when you actually let things be, when you actually hear, this moment just opens up also. Just like a beautiful flower which opens up when the sun comes up. It's one of the great similes of meditation, the thousand-petaled lotus. When the warmth and the light of the sun arise in the morning, the lotus opens up. It keeps opening and opening and opening, layer after layer of petals, until it gets right deep inside to the most beautiful part. This is what happens with the warmth of compassion and the light of awareness. Right in this moment, we shine awareness and kindness right in this moment. We focus on that, and there we pursue the happiness. Actually, the happiness, we don't even pursue it, the happiness comes to us. It's a beautiful little metaphor of the lotus flower. It opens up by itself as long as you are here and are kind. And this is what we do. You notice there's so much beauty and wonder and joy and happiness coming here when we're not pursuing something else. You can't enjoy this moment when you're busy wanting something else. But people could say, oh, well, if you live like that all the time, you'll never want anything. There'll be no progress in this world. I think, haven't we got enough progress already? Haven't we got big enough houses? Have we got big enough hospitals? You know, hospitals are never big enough. Why is that? Because people keep getting more and more sick. Every time you open up a new hospital, you have to open up another one. Every time you open up a prison, you have to open up another one. Is there something going wrong there somewhere? Can you see the reason why? We got so stressed trying to make things happen, we've lost the art of enjoying where we are. Always going for progress, never stopping. Never stopping once, just to be. That's what I said in the meditation, in a little observation. There are so few human beings in the world. There are many human goings, going somewhere. Many human lingerings in the past. But how many humans actually being here? You know, we're supposed to be human beings, but we're not. Always humans doing something. Going somewhere. I remember one of the friends who comes on a Saturday. You know, I'm sometimes very busy. You see me just going here, going there, carrying stuff. And I was carrying stuff into the office. And I just happened to go past him, and I was trying to sort of quickly get something done. He said, how are you today, Ajahn Brahm? And I said, I'm getting there. Have you ever said that? I'm getting there. And then he's much wiser than I was. He said, where are you trying to get to? And I thought, oh God, he's caught me out. When you get where you try to get to, all this rushing around, all this hard work, all this driving here, driving there, going to work Monday mornings, doing this, doing that. Where are you trying to get to anyway? I'll tell you where you're trying to get to. There's three places you get to in Perth. Karrakatta, Fremantle, Pinneroo. The three crematoriums. That's where you're getting to. Okay, for those overseas, it's any place, a cremation ground or a cemetery. That's where we're getting to. So I realized I was really just missing out there. So this time when people say, how are you? Or what are you doing? I never ever say I'm getting there anymore. I say I'm being here. Now, can you get that into your head? Don't try and get somewhere. Try and be here. Now, if you can do that, you can understand how to pursue happiness in life. Being here instead of trying to get somewhere. Becoming a human being again. Getting somewhere again is, why are you trying to get somewhere? Because there's things which need to be done. There's things which are wrong. Things which need to be fixed. Buildings need to be built. Tables at this fundraiser need to be sold. Blah, blah, blah. There's always things needed to be done. But okay, sometime you can do that. But please, sometime in your life, try and be here. All of the assignments you have to do at university, all of those dishes which need to be washed. Oh, can't you just be here for a change and enjoy the moment and just let all this stuff go? And if you know how to do that, you'd understand the meaning of that Four Noble Truths. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. And people think they're pursuing happiness, but they're not. They're just fixing up faults. And the two are totally different. Pursuing happiness, fixing up faults, are diametrically opposite. We think if we fix up all the faults, solve all the problems, clean all the dishes, then I'll be happy. And I've already mentioned that that never works. So if you're going to have a pursuit of happiness, don't go pursuing happiness by fixing up the problems. If you're fixing up the problems, it's endless. There's another problem comes. Try and just pursue happiness instead. To hell with the problems. Yeah, they're there. But I'm going to focus on the other part of the patient. Not the schizophrenia. The other part. Not the part of life with all the politics, slagging each other, the corruption in the world. How about focusing? Yeah, the sick people. But how about focusing on the other part? The happiness. I also like saying that story when there was this nun. She was an Australian, a Tibetan practitioner. I don't care whatever practitioner that you are. Don't even care whether you're Christian or Muslim or whatever. You know, if you're a friend, you're a friend. That's it. So I went to see her in the old hospice when it was over in Shenton Park. Terrible thing closing that hospice down, but they did. And I went to see her because she gave a call to me over in Serpentine Monastery. She said, I've been looking after her for a while, counselling her and stuff. She said, Ajahn Brahm, I think I'm going to go soon. Can you please come and visit me one last time? And as many of you would have experienced, I've experienced this so many times, the doctors don't know, but the patient knows they're about to go. She died a day and a half later. So what did I do? Of course, I was a really busy monk, so stopped everything I was doing. Who cares? You've got to go and look after a friend. So drove all the way from Serpentine to Shenton Park, about an hour and a half that day, and got to the old hospice. And you had to check in with the duty nurse. And I said, I've come to see this. He had a Tibetan name, Jumpa something or other. And went to go and check in. And she said, I always remember this nurse. She was an Irish nurse. And she said, I'm sorry, but you can't visit her. So look, I've just come all the way from Serpentine. It's an hour and a half. I don't care where you've come from. We have to respect our patient's wishes. She was really fierce. She was like the Australian version of Margaret Thatcher. She was. I remember Margaret Thatcher's one of her famous quotes, there's three types of ministers. One you argue down, one you beat down, the other ones you grind down. I don't remember that one. But anyway, she was like that. And so I can be quite sort of tough, and so I can stand my ground against anybody, as some of you know. And I said, no, look, she just called me, and she asked me to come. And this nurse was really angry. She glared at me and said, come with me. So I went with her. I went to the patient's door, and there was this, I'd always remember this, this big sign on the door. The sign read, absolutely no visitors. And I like telling the story too. I told it many times. And the nurse pointed to that sign. See? It said, absolutely no visitors. And I looked at it. You know what it had on the bottom? In small print? Except Ajahn Brahm. It had it there. And I just could not resist. I know it's not an ethical, compassionate thing to do, but I could resist. I looked at that nurse and said, see? And I enjoyed that too. And she was very upset, but she let me in. And then, you know, the first thing I did, you know, seeing this poor Australian girl, you know what it's like in the last stages of cancer. You know, you look like so gaunt, no muscle on you at all, really thin. You know, just such a shadow of the person you used to know. But she was so happy to see me. And first thing I said, why did you put that notice on the door? Why was me an exception? And she said, and I always remember this, she said, because you're the only person here who talks to me, not to my sickness. You treat me as a person, not someone who's dying. And she said, tell me the lady's joke. And I was talking to her as if I would talk to her just in a coffee shop. She had enough of being mentioned as sick. She knew she was dying. She knew how sick she was. She didn't need other people to say, oh, you poor thing. Oh, that's terrible. Oh, we'll miss you so much. Does that really help when you're dying? Of course it doesn't. So I was not focusing on the illness. I was focusing on the other part of her. I was pursuing happiness, not looking at this almost like desecrated body, which had been almost destroyed totally by this terrible cancer. I wasn't looking at that. I was looking at this beautiful person inside. And that's what she recognized, and that's what she wanted, and that's what she needed. I was pursuing happiness, you know, in a hospice room with someone who's going to die in about 30 hours. Now you know actually how to pursue happiness, to see beauty and joy. We actually laughed, had a few great jokes. There are some jokes which are great, and people do laugh sometimes. And that was wonderful actually to see that and to actually do that. And it was a different way of looking at life. So look, if you want to pursue happiness in life, there's so much happiness there. And it's not just for the sake of, oh, I'm just going to ignore all the suffering in the world. That suffering is there, but this solves the suffering deeply. And it solves your suffering as well. The more of you are happy, the less work I have. The less work everybody else has. Remember all the people who try to make you happy. And it's one less person they have to worry about. So out of compassion for the world, you be compassionate to yourself. Pursue happiness in this moment. And realize, in the people you live with, it's absolutely true that I see so much beauty in the people who come here on a Friday night. And when they come and say they're having marriage problems, I just can't figure it out. Two really beautiful, good people. How come you can't live together? You're gorgeous, both of you. Because they can't see that anymore. They can see only the mistakes. Oh, you don't know what he's like. I said, actually, you know, you live with him all the time, but actually I know him much better than you do. He's not that sort of bastard. You know, she's not that bitch. She's a beautiful girl. Wonderful inside. So if you can see that yourself, like I see you, it's so easy to live with another person. You just like it's so easy to live with myself. When you can see the beauty and the goodness, you pursue happiness in that person. You don't pursue the faults. You don't focus on the schizophrenia. You focus on the other part of that person. It's there. You don't look at the newspaper. You look on the other side, the beauty surrounding you, which is enormous, incredible. People just can't see that. Maybe it's because they're used to it. Maybe that guy was living in Scotland all the time, go up and down that road every day of his life. Maybe that's what it was. He got so used to it, couldn't see it anymore. Maybe you've been living with your partner for so long, you can't see the beauty in them anymore. But it's always there. All you need to do is to pursue it. And if you know what the pursuit of happiness is, you know where it's enshrined in the US Constitution, but they don't understand what it meant. Great, great saying. And now you can understand what the pursuit of happiness is. How simple it is. Not when I get this, then I'll be happy. But to see it right now in the beauty inside of you, in the beauty of the person sitting next to you, even in the beauty of life, even in the beauty in a cancer ward, even in the beauty of a chapel in the funeral parlour. To see it everywhere. That's what I remember seeing. Even just the last example, my father's funeral. I saw the beauty there. What a wonderful performance his life was. Thank you for all those years. Just because it had an ending doesn't mean it wasn't beautiful. No more than the symphony of the concerts. All those concerts, they always have endings. The movies have endings. The days have endings. And I always like the days in Western Australia. Because actually where we live is up on the hills. So often you see these beautiful sunsets. If you go to certain parts of our monastery over the Indian Ocean, they're gorgeous. Endings can be so beautiful. So you see the beauty in life. What a wonderful concert that was. Now it's finished. I wouldn't have missed that for the world. Thank you, Dad. If you pursue happiness, you can see it in the most unlikely places. And then, if you know that, you know what wisdom is. You're not pursuing solving problems in life. You're pursuing the happiness. And hey presto, there are no more problems. Thank you for listening. Okay, so we have some questions, comments and complaints as usual. First of all, from overseas, here we go. Number one, we have from UK, Adelaide and the Netherlands today. Oh, this is an interesting one. Simon from UK, how far can the Buddhist Dharma be used as a social revolutionary tool? Yes, down with the government, down with the establishment, down with the rich, up with the poor. No, that's old-fashioned. But it is a social revolution, not a political revolution, but a social revolution to get people to see things in a different way, to pursue the happiness in places they'd never looked before. And of course, many people make up a society. This is where we are, and we can use the Buddha Dhamma to change the world. Why not? Change your world first. When you change your world, the world around you changes as well. So don't try and change others first. Change yourself first of all, and other people change too. So yeah, I think it can be used. That's why I often say we should start a Buddhist party in Australia. And a Buddhist party, we abolish taxes. No taxes. We just have donation boxes. And we won't need to raise taxes because we just have fundraising dinners, only $160 a seat. You can get your tickets at the desk. Here we go again. Then we can raise a lot of money, isn't that? That's the way we expect monasteries and Buddhist societies to run. So please support it. So, yeah. And what's the other thing? Oh, yes, we have to keep five precepts. That was the basis of our law. So no alcohol. Alcohol would be banned in Australia. That's why the Buddhist party would never even get past the starting line in Australia. Never mind. One day we'll do it. Larry from Adelaide. Is working in Australia Defence as a software engineer wrong livelihood? I have great career opportunities. However, I have my doubts about wrong livelihood. Australia Defence. When I was in UK some years ago, and people were taking me to this monastery and the other monastery,
we're passing all these huge amounts of land which are owned by the Ministry of Defence in UK. And to my driver, I said, look, this is a misnomer. It's not the Ministry of Defence, it's the Ministry of Attack. Because that's what the aircraft are for, and the guns and the bullets and the rifles. They're not to defend yourself, they're attack. So I always think that, you know, you should have, you know, say it as it is, be honest. It's not the Minister of Defence, it's the Minister of Attack. And it's not sort of the defence, Australian defence, Australian attack. But, you know, that fortunately these days, most of the defence department in Australia, we don't really go fighting wars with people anymore. It used to be that way. And it really is usually for a lot of humanitarian work is done by the army these days. They go in there whenever there's earthquakes or whenever there's floods because they've got the manpower, the resources, the organisation. I think they were up in Queensland, you know, a few times, you know, trying to fix up the floods in Brisbane and other places. So I think the soldiers are actually changing, which is wonderful. They're not just going around shooting people. We're leaving that to robots called drones. I don't know if that's a good idea, but at least, you know, that people, many soldiers are now doing humanitarian work. So maybe that might be just a way of changing the idea of soldiers and army. They have the organization, they have the manpower, they have the resources. And that's a much better way of solving world conflicts with what's called soft power. Maybe the army can do that. Wouldn't it be wonderful? An army of soldiers, men and women, who don't have tanks, but got convoys of food, got bulldozers to clear landslides in places where there's earthquakes. They're beginning to do that. So maybe, I always like to say that why not change things from inside rather than from outside? So the software engineers, see if you can really have software which creates soft power, and maybe that might be okay. Anyway, last one from the Netherlands, Joe from the Netherlands. How can you push someone that tends to be negative more towards a positive view? Please don't be negative about their negativity. So just tell them, I love the way you're so negative. It's so beautiful. It's just so cute. And then that may sort of start changing things. If you're negative about the negative, you're actually feeding them. So that's why I say, oh, they're negative. You know, they may be having a hard time in life. And there was this one lady who'd always used to ring up years ago. I don't know what happened to her. But, you know, she'd always ring up the monastery and said, she was actually a really hard communist. I'm going to come in there and I'm just going to machine gun all you lazy monks. We used to say. And she used to swear and all sorts of stuff. And, you know, she was a Latino. And in the end, I said, oh, you just, you know, I know you. You just got this really hard outside, but you're just really soft in the middle. I said, oh, thank you, Ajahn Brahm. You understand me. And I did. That's why she kept on calling me. So, yeah, people are negative on the outside, but you just go inside of them, and they're always really soft and mushy inside. I've never known anyone who's not. So, yeah, don't push them. You know, they tend to be negative. Just, you know, just be kind to the negativity. And just, this is what the Buddha said, the only way to overcome negativity is with the greater power of kindness. But you really have to, some people are so powerfully negative, you just really have to up your compassion to counter it. And it's no negativity which cannot be overcome by the superior power of great mega compassion. So just lift up your compassion game, and then the negativity will just burn itself out. Okay, there we go. There's a couple of questions from overseas. Any questions from Perth? Anyone here who would like to ask a question? They are free, no extra charge. Thank you, Eddie. Go on. Please, I've got to wait until the microphone comes to you. Very good.
Ajahn Brahm,
yes,
actually, you know, if we look into the Four Noble Truths,
yes.
Eightfold Path,
yes.
The Buddha was asking us to change our way of life,
yes.
Change our attitude,
yes.
And change our thinking, you know,
yep.
In the pursuit of peace and happiness, isn't it? You know, the Eightfold Path, right understanding, right thought, you know.
Yeah, I have looked
right
at
speech,
it
right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration, to change our attitude to the right way.
Ah.
Isn't it?
Is it changing ourselves?
If we look at it, it is. Sorry.
Who is there to change? Did you not hear the Buddha say there's no one in there, Eddie? So who are you trying to change?
Actually, we can, Ajahn, isn't it? We can.
Never
we can,
try.
You know,
never
because we've
try
been conditioned, you know, isn't it?
Never try and outwit a monk. This is what people have been doing all their lives, trying to change things. But really, the only way to really think things change is when we stop. We don't change. When we stop trying to change, then change can begin. And that's not sort of some smart aleck statement. This is actually what happens. With kindness, compassion, accepting, letting things be, being a human being, which is not trying to get anywhere. This is what great saying of Ajahn Chah. We meditate, we practice, not to get things or change things, but to let things go. Let things go, let things be. And then things change. The only way that that lotus opens up is never through force, never through pushing. Only with the warmth, the compassion, the light, the awareness from the sun, which is you. You're aware and kind to yourself. And you open up. And the great beauty deep inside the lotus is there. That is how change happens. Not by changing things. That's the meaning of that saying. That's deep. Okay, thank you so much, Eddie. So I think that's enough for this evening. So now we can go and pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then we can go and do what we need to do.
Arahang Sama Sambuddha Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami.